Pigweed here from Beer and Conversation with Pigweed and Crow Hill. Today we review a Mexican lager and discuss the somewheres versus the anywheres. Hello and welcome to Beer and Conversation with Pigweed and Crow Hill. Good evening, Crow Hill.
Good evening, Pigweed.
Cheers.
Cheers.
So what's on your mind?
Well, you know, back in the days when I was on Facebook,
yeah.
A long time ago,
yeah.
People would post things, and I would think, do you know that, you know, your mother might be on here, or your grandmother might be on here, your high school teacher, your pastor, other people that you know, you're saying this crazy stuff. Do you know these other people are going to see that?
Right. Or, yeah, maybe they... Or I wonder, they probably aren't going to see that, you know, because of the friends thing. Would you still say that if they could?
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. If you knew that your grandmother was going to see it, would you still say that?
Right. Well, yeah. That'd be a good kind of way just to go through life.
Yeah.
At any rate.
Yes. So, so right now, what's on my mind is, I wish I was in Mexico.
No, what's the name of the beer?
That's what I mean. I don't really wish I was in Mexico. That's the name of the beer.
Ah!
I mean, I might want to be in Mexico. I'm not sure.
As long as there's COVID or cartel murders.
There you go. I've been watching this interesting TV show called The Imposters, and they go down to Mexico.
Right.
And one of the characters just falls in love with Mexico and wants to stay there.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. So, I wish I was in Mexico, a Mexican-style lager from the boys up the street, Oliver Brewing Company.
Okie doke.
Mexican-style lager with lime and lemon.
Huh. Although there, which is interesting, so this is a very American version.
Yeah.
Because there are no lemons in Mexico.
There are no lemons in Mexico? Really?
No. I mean, it wouldn't be allowed in Mexico, but no, this is Pigweed assures me. In fact, limón, which sounds like lemon... Is the word for lime. Yeah.
Huh.
And I'm like, well, what about lemons? They're like, it's such a rare thing, it doesn't even have its own name. They're called yellow limes.
Okay. All right.
Weird. Why would that be? Like, you can find, people have lime trees just in their backyard. You know,
right.
There's limes everywhere.
Yeah.
Why, wouldn't you think the lemons would grow in the same climate as limes?
I would think so, but I'm not an expert on those kinds of things.
So, hold on. So what else do you got here? You got anything in the ABV that I should know about?
Yeah, so it's 4.8. Standard lager kind of a range.
Super light, super, you know, looks like Corona.
And not the virus.
No,
I don't really believe this. This can says 1 pint. That's not 1 pint.
No, it is not. I think I would know that. If I could identify 11.2 versus 12.
I can identify 12 versus 16. And this is not 1 pint. This is a 12-ounce can, and it says 1 pint on it. So.
Well, maybe in Mexico, the word for 12 ounces is pint.
There you go. I was at a bar one time, and there was a sign that said, sale on pints. Okay.
All right.
And the waitress said, "Oh, I want to remind you that we have a sale on pints."
Wow. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Very. Yeah. So did you?
She was very young.
Yeah. Did you dig deep into her beer knowledge while you were there?
I just told her. I think it's pint.
Just to save you from future embarrassment.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I know. Sometimes that's awkward, though. Like when you want to correct, it's uncomfortable to correct a person,
yeah.
But actually you're doing them a favor to prevent their future embarrassment.
That's right. Exactly. My boss used the word incorrectly.
Right.
And
ooh, that's a toughie there.
Know,
what do you do?
So I said, no, this is pronounced this way.
Ooh.
And,
all right.
Yeah. All right. So this is
right,
fine. This is pretty good. Yeah. Mexican lager. A little bit of lemon and lime flavor
to
it.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. I like it. Enjoyable. Sounds like a good summer beer.
Huh. All right. Well, let's talk. We'll talk about your snooping grandma at another point in the show. But right now, let's just talk about the ruling class.
Okay.
Because there is, in fact, a ruling class.
Of course, there always is. Right?
Sorry to disappoint you anarchists. Somebody has to be in charge.
Right.
We can't all be in charge.
That's the myth of democracy, that we're all in charge, but it really isn't true.
Okay. So you would think that the Who do you want to be in charge? The best and the brightest that go to the best schools.
I mean, in a way,
I'm talking about the minister of finance or whatever.
Right.
Not just everybody who's a boss. Right. You know, I'm sure people without those degrees have perfectly good qualities. But the guy who's going to be the head of foreign policy. You know, these people.
You want those people to have some education. Yeah, right.
However, do they share the same values as the people that they rule?
Well, that's the problem. The original idea of the republic was that local communities would elect somebody who represented them, who would go off and represent their local interests at the, you know, in the Senate or in the whatever it was. And so you want them, you're going to pick somebody who's smart, you know, who can speak well, who has other good qualities, but you also want somebody who's representing you when they go in there.
Yeah. Now, so in a way, what we have instead are East and West Coasters who are a little contemptuous of flyover country.
Right.
You know, the deplorable masses.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, where did this come from? Why are in our style democracy have produced, well, in England as well, Europe, in general, an elite that really doesn't care for the unwashed masses. And this journalist, David Goodhart, has an idea that I had not considered before. And when I looked into it, I realized it caught some steam, as a lot of people have used this idea.
Yeah.
And it's the somewheres versus the anywheres.
Right.
So what the heck does he mean by
that? So, yeah, somebody who's a somewhere, somebody has they have some grounding in an actual place. They have some grounding in a community, in a way of life, in a lifestyle. You know, they might be a farmer,
mm-hmm.
or they might be, you know, they might be a rancher, or they might be a city dweller, or whatever it is. But they have a community that they exist in, that's where they get their values and their vision and their ideas from. They kind of have the sense of belonging to a place.
So they're from somewhere.
Yeah.
So he calls them the somewheres.
Yeah.
And then you have the anywheres.
Yeah, and the anywheres, they exist in some sort of intellectual plane where everything is about policy and ideas, and they don't really care whether they're in London or in New York or in Los Angeles. They just don't want to be in Des Moines. You know,
so it's what they call, what was the term?
Don't want to pick on Des Moines.
An achieved identity.
Yes.
So your identity doesn't come from your somewhere.
Yeah.
It comes from where where you have achieved. In the United States, the average American, now I'm not sure how this is calculated, the average American, but how numbers work that way, but lives 18 miles from his mother.
Wow.
Which I think the anywheres
probably live
or shocked by that
miles.
Or shocked by that
yeah.
because they're like, well, who does that? 60% of British people live within 20 miles of where they lived when they were 14.
Okay, I do.
So yeah. I practically do. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is these are the somewheres,
right?
But the anywheres are the people who are making the decisions.
Yeah, and they're the ones who leave their small town in West Texas or whatever it is, mm-hmm. or, you know, their small town in Alabama, and they run off to a high-powered school, and they get a degree, and they get a job in the city, and then now they've lost all contact.
So, there's some aspect of your formative years, you know, like in your teen years,
right?
But really, your sort of intellectual formative years
mm-hmm.
are going to be at this point where you have cut ties with your community.
Right. And that's actually one of the things that I have mixed feelings with about college in general.
Yeah.
Because the college years are very formative years in a person's life.
Right.
I mean, high school is formative to some extent, but college is very formative. And taking people out of their environment and sending them off to some unreal place for that time of their life,
I know.
I want people to learn. I want people to study, and I want people to learn. But the idea of sending them off into this place that has no connection with reality.
Well, so you develop as an adult away from your parents,
right?
Away from your community. your church, your what would you say, your high school coach,
basketball coach, right. All the people who were important to you growing up, you know, the guy next door, you mowed his lawn, you know, he didn't have a huge impact on you, but he would say some things from time to time, and you know, you knew that he was watching when you were out doing stuff,
right? Which kind of takes us back to grandma a little bit,
yeah.
That there's a difference between your behavior and what you value. So the working, the somewheres, care about
what the neighbors think.
They care about what the neighbors think.
Right.
And they value tradition.
Yeah.
And they value systems that have longevity to them, that have history to them.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
The history of your hometown. All these things are important to the somewheres.
Yeah.
That are not important to the anywheres.
That's right.
And yeah, like what you're talking about, I lived in the dorm life, but I went there, I was 22 when I moved to the dorm.
Really?
So really, that's kind of a big, mm-hmm. you know, 18 to 22, four years doesn't mean anything to me now.
Mm-hmm.
18 to 22, it means
those are important years, yeah.
And you saw some 18s who just couldn't handle the freedom.
I know. Yeah.
And I get it. Like, sometimes you just need to have somebody watching over you.
Yeah.
What our guy David Goodhart, he says, we are ruled by people without a communitarian value system replaced with a nomadic libertarian value system. So
right. And not libertarian in the sense that we would like.
Right. Yeah, in more of an anything goes kind of a libertarianism,
right.
You know. So I just never considered that before. What I think is particularly interesting about that is instead of valuing tradition and history, you get these ideas that you would never have considered before and you would never have brought to the Thanksgiving table
right.
before.
Right.
So you are now sort of encouraged to cast off your oppressive bourgeois values
yeah.
that you grew up with and embrace these exciting, new, sexy, fun, late-night smoking cigarettes ideas of, you know, existentialism, and, you know, I mean, which is fun
actually,
stuff
thanks,
to talk about.
It's funny that you mentioned Thanksgiving, because think about this. Every year, for the last 4 or 5 years maybe, in the weeks before Thanksgiving, all these articles come out about how to not get in a fight at Thanksgiving.
They do.
With your backward, stupid relatives, you know, because that's a huge problem nowadays, because people are so divorced from their family, they're so separated from their family,
yeah.
that they've adopted these totally crazy values that when they come back, everybody's in one another's faces.
Yeah, for the one time a year you
right.
see your families. Yeah, I mean, I hang out with my brothers and sisters all the time.
Right.
So Thanksgiving is just
another day, right?
One big party where right. we're all hanging out together. But
right.
you know, there's no like, oh God, here comes Bill,
there's
you
more
know,
of that,
this
yeah.
is, we're gonna, you know,
well,
how
can
this
put
is
this
gonna
up,
go.
Put up with this once a year.
And that, yeah, that's a result of the anywheres invading the somewheres.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because the somewheres aren't going to the anywheres for Thanksgiving.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And they're
in, not going to,
in
yeah,
their one bedroom apartment.
In New York. Right, yeah.
Right.
That's right.
But they are making the decisions for the rest of us.
Right. And that's just another way in which, you know, there's been this big reaction in the United States and in England and in other countries against the elite.
Yeah.
The idea that there's this elite that is totally disconnected from us. They don't understand who we are. Not only do they not understand, but they pretty much despise us.
Yes, and that reaction is called is populism.
Yeah.
But, which, the first time I learned about the term populism, I was like, so you mean a politician that appeals to the broadest number of people?
That's a bad thing?
why is there some, like, why do people make a face?
Why
when
sneer
they,
at that?
Yeah, sneer, exactly.
Correct.
It's like,
yeah.
you know, a populist politician. You mean he's got broad support by the regular people?
Right.
As opposed to just not just following we at the top?
Yeah.
What the hell is he doing?
Right. Yeah, but I think the reason they sneer at populism is because they sneer at the regular guy. Because they think, oh, you're the guy who's appealing.
Yeah, but why
to...
don't we turn it on his head and say, you're an elitist prick?
Yeah, well, they do. I mean, that's basically what we're doing right now.
Good.
Is you've got you've got the elitist pricks saying, oh, a bunch of populist, you know, people can't put their pants on straight. And then you have the populists saying, well, you're a bunch of elitist pricks. And, you know what, and they're both right. You know, I mean, it's true that some people are better educated.
Yeah.
They have a more cosmopolitan world, conscious perspective.
Right. I agree.
Things.
Right. The average, blue collar guy that I like, that grew up in my small town, whatever. Yeah. A terrific dude. I love him as my neighbor, but I don't want if I want him making decisions either.
Right.
I mean, he really doesn't have the worldly view.
Yes.
To, you know, to make policy and such.
Right.
So I get that the hoi polloi has its own limitations.
Well, here's what we've missed though. So yes, we do want the educated, smart people making decisions about important things. But what we've missed is that there is a form of wisdom in those so allegedly uneducated, you know, guys who are just changing tires every day, or those guys,
it's funny because they're celebrated in Hollywood movies. You'll always get that guy with the farmer with the wisdom,
right?
But in real life,
no, they don't make any sense.
But they're that guy.
There is a kind of wisdom of the masses that is something, and unfortunately now we have this total disconnect. It's
right.
Like you're either an elitist or you're a populist. Mm-hmm. And there's no respect across the board either way. Mm-hmm. And we need to have respect. The people who are the not-so-educated people need to realize that, well, those guys actually know something. You know, they know something about finance. They know something about international law. They know something about whatever it is, okay? You need to have that respect.
Right.
But the people at the top have to have some respect. Wait a minute. These guys are living their lives. They have a different kind of intelligence. They're figuring things out. They're balancing their checkbook. They're raising their kids. They're doing important things.
Right, which is part of the PNC principle to bring politics down to the lowest level that you can.
Right.
So that if you don't sit in Washington with your Ivy League degree and make agricultural policies for the man in Wyoming.
Right, because that guy knows way, way, way more about what it's really like on a farm than you do.
Right, so let that guy talk to his local legislature,
right.
And they'll come to the right decision.
Yes.
And trust them to do that. That's what the problem is that the elites don't trust them to make the right decision. What are the idea of, saving the people from themselves?
Right,
like, you know,
they don't
vote in their own interest.
I know, pricks talking about it. But that was what Brexit was about, right?
The people, okay, yeah, the well, people I think in, that this David Goodhart term, that this was actually initially applied to the Brexiteers,
right,
the exiteers and the Brexiteers.
Because a lot of the people in England, they're trying to run a bakery or something, right? And some guy who was never elected, like he lost every election he tried, and then he got appointed to a bureaucratic position in Brussels, is making rules about how to run a bakery in London,
and he
knows nothing about bakeries.
And people who are in the small communities that are being impacted by excessive immigration,
right?
As opposed to the anywheres who they don't care. They live in London, and they're
it's actually I think it's there's a cynical way to look at this.
Yeah,
there's a you could say they don't care, but the cynical way to look at it is no, the anywheres need low-cost labor to be their servants, to be the people who come in and clean their house and watch their kids.
Yeah, I read a piece about the anywheres of Silicon Valley.
Right, exactly.
And so they like low-cost servants and low-cost software developers, right?
That's right.
The H1N1...
Yeah.
Not
H1N1, that's the virus.
No.
H1 visas, right, yeah.
Bringing in Indians...
Yeah.
To do low-cost software.
That's right.
Development.
So in a way, I like to read Sherlock Holmes. And you go back and you read Sherlock Holmes, and there was this huge difference between the gentlemen, you know, the people who had means, and the people on the lower end of things who were just kind of scraping their way by.
Yeah.
And they would be the maids, and they would be the butlers, and they would be the guys who took care of your shoes and your boots and drove the cabs and all that kind of stuff. And there was this huge disconnect, this huge disparity. Well, in America, it didn't used to be that way. There was a time when the difference between the rich and the poor wasn't that big of a deal, right? But we're getting to the point now where the anywheres, the rich people, want to be able to hire people to come in and shine their shoes and you know, be their butler and be their maid and all
and
this
they,
kind of
and
stuff.
And they don't live in communities where, you know, where their schools are flooded and
right.
their hospitals
yeah.
are flooded. Right. Right? They don't experience any downside.
Yeah.
They've
got a gated community, and they imported the workers in to come in and take care of their kids
because they're not from anywhere.
Right.
So they're in Silicon Valley, and none of them grew up in Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
Right. So they've created their own anywhere community, and that's those. There's anybody making it for? Yeah. Actually, forget about government. Talk about who's making decisions for us. It's who? It's Facebook and Google.
That's true.
It's Silicon Valley is involved in
to a large extent. They're making a lot of decisions.
Yeah, you know about the how they're going to get involved in politics and what their social justice policies are, and that's where we get all of our information. So
that's, right.
that's as big as anything else.
Yeah, that is a problem.
So it's been thinking about Grandma watching.
Yeah.
Have you ever had friends, friends whose parents don't really care where the kids, what the kids are up to, and you're like, man, that must be so cool. Like your parents don't care what you do.
Well,
and then we later on realize
that was bad.
Yeah,
I remember in high school.
That kid's not going to turn out that great.
In high school, you thought of those parents as the cool parents.
Exactly.
But then when you get a little older, you realize they weren't such cool
parents.
They weren't being parents at all.
Have you seen the, have you seen Off the Boat?
No.
Korean, it's kind of like Kim's Convenience in a way, but they're a very...
Is it Netflix?
No, it's network.
Okay.
But like I felt about Kim's Convenience, it's really... very American middle class traditional values, which would look corny if it was a regular white family.
Right.
But when you have it from an immigrant family, it kind of looks like, oh, they're just clinging to their ways. And you know what I mean? So,
they get a pass. They get a pass.
Right. So, yeah, so the kid's friend, single mom, and they stay up late. They have potato chips and sodas for dinner. Mom walks in. The kid's like, "Hey, watch this!" Farts at her. And the Korean kid's like, "Man, you can do anything you want." And then, like after about after he goes over the house twice, he's like, "I don't know.
This is really isn't right." Right?
Yeah. It seems so cool for a few minutes,
right?
But it's the idea of having somebody, you know, kind of keeping you in check.
Yep.
And when
having
you run
some standards, right?
When you run off at 18 and never come back again.
And your formative years are spent living on your own in a dorm and doing whatever the heck you want.
Whatever the heck you
and
want.
Listening to a bunch of crazy ideas, totally divorced from the influence of your parents that might moderate some of that stuff, you know, where they might say, okay, well, that's fine, but think about this.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Having it, there needs to be, you need to have a foot on the ground. I think that's the...
Well, so my mom is from Appalachia.
Right.
Or Appalachia, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
And a country saying is, he got too far from his raisin.
Okay.
So, you know, a country boy that goes off to the big city and then, you know, bad things happen.
Yeah.
There you go. You know,
for some reason, I was trying to imagine what raisins had to do with this. That's not what you meant.
But if I said raising, then it doesn't have that country, country sound to it. Got too far from, or even if he does, it doesn't leave town, but he just, he forgot how he was raised.
Yes.
And that's what got him into the trouble he's in right now.
Yeah.
And so he got too far from his raisin.
That's right.
And so, we are run by people who got too far.
Yes, that's right. Most of the people who run our society today are totally long way from their raisin.
Yes, they are. Now, there is no dorm life in Mexico.
How come?
Nobody goes off to college.
How come?
Because you live at home until you get married. You don't even, there's no...
Nobody goes to college?
Yeah. But your local college.
Oh, okay. So it's like community college.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, or university. I mean,
yeah.
You live in a, you know... Yeah,
depends on where you live.
A big university in a big city, sure.
Everybody's a commuter, that's what you're saying.
Everybody, yeah. And I've known with in my family, you know, go live with your aunt, who lives in the big city.
Okay, sure. To go to a better college. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Mexico Minister of Finance, he went to an American Ivy League school or possibly Cambridge or Oxford.
Okay, right.
So, but you don't have kids leaving home and to go live in a dorm in some foreign city and then not relocate. You basically, you know, you might move from a town of 200 to a big city for a work opportunity.
Yeah.
But, you know, not necessarily, if you go to a town of 200, nobody, you're not going past elementary school anyway. So you're thinking about college.
So are you saying that the elite in Mexico are not as elite as they are in the United States?
Well, I don't know. Or are they more elite? Because they're even more distant from
their family. Oh, I see. The ones who are the true elite have gone off to Oxford.
Elite. So yes, yeah. Those people, that level.
But the people who run, you know, the kind of the mid-level bureaucracy who runs everything.
Yes.
That's why it's
a much more conservative nation
right.
in yeah. general.
Right.
Yes. Just that very highest levels of government.
I see.
But everybody else, yeah, you don't really go off and get an apartment by yourself or with a couple of buddies.
Really?
That much? No. You really do stay.
It's a much more conservative.
You
society.
Really do stay yeah. at home until you're married, and I was talking to Miss Piggy. I'm like, so you know, let's say you're late 20s,
yeah,
and the guy you're dating still lives with mom.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, do you think that, God, wouldn't it be, what is it, have his own place by now? Like,
right.
which is yeah, what you
yeah,
would
yeah.
think it's now,
thinking
right?
of America, sure.
No, but now, they're like, you know what, that's sweet. He's taking care of his mom.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, they, it might be fun if he had his own room if you wanted him just for a temporary boyfriend, but as a quality for a future husband?
I see, yeah.
You
want somebody who has some connection.
Yes, who has some connection and who has a feeling that it's more important for me to take care of mom and dad until I'm ready to move out. And, yeah. Kind of nice.
Something to be said for that. Yeah. All right, so anywheres and somewheres.
Anywheres and somewheres.
You know what I'd really like
to
hear?
It's just, you know, of course we always talk about class difference, class war, you know, the educated, non-educated, the rich and the poor, but this geographical mobility aspect to it just really got my gears going.
I would love to hear, what's the guy's name again? Goodhart. Dave, I would like to hear David Goodhart and Jonathan Haidt. Because they have very different perspectives on what the divide is, right? I mean, the anywhere versus somewhere divide is a good one.
Yeah.
Jonathan Haidt has a different way of looking at it. I'd like to hear the two of them talk. That would be pretty interesting.
Because this is more of a digital divide. Is that what you mean by the Jonathan Haidt's?
Jonathan Haidt is the one who did the moral foundations things. And he ties some of it into, you know, the iPhones and the impact of
social
of
media.
Digital stuff. But he also just has a way of dividing liberals and conservatives based on different values where...
Oh, okay. I'm with you. Yes.
Yeah. Where Goodhart is dividing them in a different way. So it would be really interesting, fascinating to hear the two of them, both intelligent men, talk about it. All right. So who's our man of the week?
Our man of the week is the recent passing of John Lewis.
John Lewis, who, you know, I don't really know what all his politics are, and I don't really care, because he was an amazing man in a lot of ways. He was involved in the early civil rights movement.
Yeah, so he and Elijah Cummings, who just passed
right.
a few weeks ago,
yeah.
Martin Luther King, Jesse
right.
Jackson, that crowd, right,
right.
from the late 60s.
Right, and
Selma March, he
yes.
was there.
And what was the bridge that they crossed over? They reenact that every once in a while. But... John Lewis, in order to do what he did, you have to face up to cops with batons, you have to face up to, you know, mounted police, you have to face up to dogs, you know, water cannons. It required some personal bravery.
Yeah.
And
yes,
and he's not a big man.
He grew up in the, in segregated Alabama.
Right.
Where danger is around the corner.
That's right. That's right. It was not a trivial thing, but they did. But here's the thing that I really like about John Lewis is, from what I've read about him, he was committed to being peaceful, to being courteous, and he was a very gentle man.
Uh-huh.
So a man of great bravery, great physical bravery,
right.
Still was a peaceful, courteous, gentle fellow. And that, to me, that's just fantastic.
It is fantastic. And it was the... the Martin Luther King, Gandhi-like approach.
Yes. That made all the difference.
That made all the difference. Yeah. Now, they are, the writer here in the Washington Times then likes to take a few minutes to separate John Lewis.
From our modern weirdos? Yeah.
Yes. This is the violent, self-serving, nasty mobs burning and looting American cities today have no concept of the Herculean strength bound up inside such a quiet man of profound principle.
Amen. Boom. To that. Exactly.
Whoa.
that's telling them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, guys. So, right, this is a guy who actually experienced oppression.
Right. Right? Unlike these morons.
Oh, are you kidding me? A bunch of woke-ass white college boys.
Yeah, they haven't experienced
any. And mostly girls.
Yeah, they haven't experienced any oppression at all.
Zero.
Yeah, and they're not even facing any threats. This no. John Lewis faced serious threats to his physical body.
Yeah.
You know, and was still kind and gentle and courteous and peaceful. That's a man.
That is a man.
So he's our man of the week.
He is our man of the week. Thank you for all your service, John Lewis.
Rest in peace.